When I was preparing this week, I've been wrestling, trying to figure out how to start. I want to take you back. I may have told you this story. I may have not. A number of years ago, I had the privilege to join a team of pastors to go to Kenya. It was part of CBM, our mission board, and it was just a really eye-opening, enlightening experience. Part of that trip was to go to Nairobi, so the capital of Kenya, into the incredible slum areas and visit with various people there. One of the ministries that we have in Kenya is that we have a ministry with the Somalia people. Now, if you know Africa at all, there's Ethiopia, there's Somalia, there's Kenya. In the 1990s, Somalia broke out in civil war, incredibly cruel, incredibly violent. Plus, there was food shortages. Plus, there was drought and famine, and so many people desperately tried to get away. It would be harder to go into Ethiopia because of some dynamics going on there, so they streamed down into Kenya. The Kenyan people welcomed them, but weren't really that happy about them being there. And many of these refugees came literally with all they could carry in their arms was all they had. They lost everything. The camps were set up, but many of them moved into Nairobi, especially to the slum area. And an interesting dynamic happened there. They would find the poorest places that you and I would find it very difficult to live in, but that's all they could afford. And they would settle in as a family. And refugee organizations all over the world would sweep in and try to help them. And the first thing they would do is they would have the fathers and the sons apply for refugee status, and then they would take them to other countries like America. What many people didn't know was happening was that very often these men would leave their wife and daughters in Nairobi in these slums, and they would go to another country with the promise that we'll make it, get a job, and we'll save and we'll bring you all over. And that never happened. In fact, many of them acted as if they'd never left anyone behind. Never. And so suddenly, these mothers and daughters are being left in slums of Nairobi with no one to support them and care for them. Our Canadian Baptist mission found them and started working with them. There's basic needs. Do you have a place to live? And yeah, that would be great. And do you have enough food? Yeah, that would be great. Do you need clothes or whatever? And we would help them in some of those things. But as the conversation started going on, they would just have very tentative requests. One of the requests, we have some medical things. Can you help us with that? Well, of course we can help you with that, and that would take place. My experience was I went to a school run by Canadian Baptist Ministries, and it was just for girls. We came in, as pastors, we came into this classroom with these girls. There's probably about 20 of them there between the ages of, say, 16 and 25 at most. Beautiful girls. The Somalian people have a very, very dark black skin and beautiful eyes. They had a mix of how they dressed. Half of it was Western, half of it was Somalian. Their head was always, the girls always had their head covered, and some had their face covered, but not very many. Beautiful, beautiful smiles. And if you've ever been in a room of girls, some of them are giggly, and some of them are shy, and some of them are wanting to ask lots of questions. And we just had this time of talking. But I listened to them, and I watched them, and I took pause to listen to what was going on. You see, what our mission had set up was a little school, because when things had finally settled, they had a place to live and a little bit of food to eat. They knew they had to get out of that place. They weren't really wanted. So how do you immigrate? Well, you need to learn English. You need to learn to read, and you need to learn to write, and you need to learn a bit about the culture you want to go to. And many of them wanted to come to Canada. And so our mission board came in and said, we'd love to help you. As I was watching them and talking with them, thinking about all the stuff that they'd gone through, stuff I never even knew much about. There was horrific horrors they went through, if you know anything about the Somalia Civil War. But they asked for very little. And I kept thinking, we can give you food, and we can give you schooling, and we can teach English, and we can help you fill out forms, but there's so much more that we could offer you. There's so much more. You just have to ask. Some of them are too shy to ask. Some didn't know what to ask. But I started to think about that phrase, there's so much more. It's a phrase I want to use for you today. As we get into this, you're going to hear me a little bit, and some of you are going to say, well, he's one of those prosperity gospel preachers. And no, I'm actually not. But I know there's so much more that God has for us than we've asked for. And so I want to take some time to talk about that. Now, if you're visiting with us, we have been going through the book of Isaiah. And really, really quick review. Isaiah was a prophet that was called by God to tell prophecies that were very negative. Powerful prophecies. Prophecy was spanned hundreds of years ahead of him. In fact, some of them thousands of years, and even some of them still to be fulfilled today. He would see very little of what was going on, but as he started to predict, if you remember what we started to talk about, he would confront them. He would confront them about their incredible idolatry. First, the 10 tribes of the north, and then the tribes of Judah. And their blatant disregard for God, that somehow they can live in idolatry and believe God would still take care of them. Then he talks about the coming of the Syrian army, and we looked at some of those events, and those are on our website if you want to listen to those sermons. Really fascinating as these armies came in as judgment for the sin of Israel. Judah, the northern tribe, or Israel, the northern tribe, was hauled away by the Assyrians. But Judah didn't learn and kept falling into idolatry, getting literally worse. There became a king called Manasseh, who was the worst of all. And so Babylon came in and swept in and took over. As we continue to read through this book, there came to be this whole section of God's wrath and God's judgment, something that we don't talk about as Christians today very, very much, but it's a reality, and you can't have God's love and holiness without that judgment. But most of us don't understand how devastating this was for the children of Israel. They ended up in the land of Babylon. They kind of these camps along the river, and they worked as slaves and servants and the most menial jobs, and were taken advantage, and they were abused, and they were violated, and all kinds of stuff was happening to them. But they had just a prayer. Lord, let us go home. But what's at home? Jerusalem was devastated. Literally, rocks were hardly piled upon each other. The Babylonians had destroyed the city so badly. The temple had been plundered, violated. As long as they had been there, everything had been hauled away. And there's a whole story in Daniel about that. All the gold, all the worship articles. There hadn't been sacrifices in the temple since they'd gone. Israel as a nation, was devastated. There wasn't villages, there wasn't towns. They had been mostly destroyed. And the people were living in exile. Some probably thought God was dead. Or they thought God had abandoned them and rejected them. But there was a prayer going up. And I want to summarize the prayer kind of in four points. This is what they asked for. This is what, as you go through Isaiah, you could go to Jeremiah, you could go to Ezekiel, you could listen to Daniel. There were a number of prayers these people were praying for. This near fulfillment, this Lord, if you could answer prayer, could you do this to us? First is they wanted, as a people, to return to Israel. They wanted to go home. It was so deep in them. And if you know anything about the Jewish people, that's never left them. In 70 AD, the Romans, or BC, AD, after death, they would be scattered through the world. And then in 1948, they would come back again saying, we need to be at home. We need to have our own land. We need to end this exile. And so you hear that prayer going up. You hear this calling, especially under men like Ezra and Nehemiah, that we need to rebuild the city of Jerusalem. We need to restore that capstone of God's people, and we need to reform it and restruct it and repair it, and all those things are talked about lots. There's this desire that we need to restore the temple. We need to get our hearts right. We need to get our spirit right. We need to get it right before God and start worshiping Him and being in relationship with Him. There's this deep, deep longing for that. And then there was a practical longing of, Lord, can you help us recreate our life? We were farmers and had it all taken away. We were businessmen. We had it all taken away. We were priests and we couldn't do it. And you hear, it's like, Lord, can we go home? Can we have a home that's our home? Can we have a family that's our family? Can we have our business and our lifestyle back? Can we return? And as I'm listening to this deep hope, longing in them, I want to suggest to you that God had much more for them. Now, I've been alluding or talking to you in the last months as we've been looking at that as you read through the book of Isaiah, there's this fascinating dynamic that goes on. It's poetic writing. It's Hebrew poetic writing. But it's interesting, he would come forward with this incredible prophecy, and it would be about the events, or about the idolatry, or about the sin, or about the judgment, and then he would dive into a prophecy of future glories. And as I started to read through this book, and we got one more week, and I hope you've been reading through the book of Isaiah, all 66, you'll find every once in a while there's these future glimpses that Isaiah places there, that God, a revelation that God gives him, and they just jump out. Isaiah chapter 2, and Isaiah chapter 11, Isaiah chapter 24, and Isaiah 65 that Jim just read, and they kind of pop out, and they're distinct, and they're different, and in the middle of that, we see this amazing prophecy we looked at last week of Isaiah 53 about the suffering servants, about how Jesus was coming to take your sin upon himself. But as I started to see these various things coming and these various prophecies coming, I started to look at them very specifically. And this morning, I want to take a few moments to just walk you through some of the things, starting in chapter 2, 11, 24, 15, that they're predicting as God is kind of looking at them and saying, but there's more. And God is also looking at you and I, and don't miss this, he's saying to you and I, there's more. Now, I got to tell you, as you start to read these verses, you may do something that crazy preachers do. I'm one of those crazy preachers. I've been talking to you over the years about prophecy having various layers to it. That the prophet will stand there and he'll look forward, and it's like a mountain range, and he'll think it's all of those one kind of things. And actually, some of these prophecies have different layers to them. That there'd be an initial or a current revelation that something will take place, like the children of Israel will return to Israel again as a nation. There's other prophecies that not only include that, but have another layer to it, or even an end times layer to it. Now, the moment in Isaiah you start to read these various prophecies, chapter 2, chapter 11, chapter 24, chapter 65, you will do something, or preachers do something. And even as I was preparing, I was looking at pastor after pastor after pastor. Because what we do is we jump out of Isaiah and we'll run all the way to the end of the Bible, to Revelation chapter 20 and 21. Because we see what Isaiah is predicting in those events, in what's called the millennium, chapter 20 of Revelation, or the new heaven and new earth, chapter 21. And we see that, and the millennium, which means 1,000 years, is 1,000-year reign of Christ on this earth, and then eternity is a new heaven and a new earth. And we look at these things Isaiah is saying, that's what he's talking about. Now, that's a fair discussion, but that seems to be where all the preachers go. And there's debate of what the millennium is, and is it allegorical or is it literal, and all of those kind of debates, and that actually debate affects all of your view of Revelation. But I want to suggest to you this morning that that's not Isaiah's point of view. He's back here. He's actually predicting the Assyrians and the Babylonians and the Medes and the Persians. And he sees this mountain range, but it's just, in his eyes, one. And so when he's talking about these prophecies and he's talking about these events coming, he's looking forward and he sees them all fitting together. And so this morning, I want to take you for a moment and looking at these prophecies through Isaiah's eyes. And to say, as he's looking at them, what is he seeing? I want to suggest to you that God says, I can bring you back to Israel. I can rebuild the city. I can reestablish the temple. I can give you a home and a family and all those things you've asked for. But there's much, much more. Now, let me take these various prophecies and kind of put them into themes. Isaiah looks forward into the future, and I believe into our future. It may be just a month or a year or 10 years away, I don't know. But he's looking in the future, and he says there's going to come a place after the tribulation, using John's revelation, there's going to come a time when Jesus is going to come back to this earth. Remember in Acts chapter 1, it says, the angel said, well, he's going to come back in the same way he's departed. Well, we know he's going to come back and he's going to set up this kingdom. As you look at the various prophecies, both in the Old and the New Testament, it will center, first of all, on him establishing his kingdom through all the earth. It will come to him taking the throne of David. Remember, this prediction and prophecy was way back, and finally he steps up and he's of the blood of the kings, and he stands up and he will take, but he will live, reign in his throne forever and ever and ever. He will come to Jerusalem. In fact, if you read the Revelation and hear how he will come to Jerusalem and to the mountain, and literally as he puts his foot down, it'll split, and he'll set up his kingdom there, and he'll set up his rule there, and it will become the center of the world. As you read Isaiah, you hear these prophecies of people from all over the world coming to Jerusalem to see Jesus, coming to Jerusalem to worship, coming to Jerusalem to learn from him and be with him and know him. In fact, if you look at Isaiah, he has this picture that throughout the passages he points of these highways that God will create all over the world. So each year we could go to the holy city, and each year we can sit at his feet. Each year we can be in his presence and allow him to rule us and teach us and judge us and walk with us. And in this place, the temple will be functioning, not for the sacrificing of sin, but the celebration and praise of who God is. And so our world will suddenly become focused, and there will be a center, and that center will be Jerusalem, for King Jesus is there. Now, I've been quite fascinated with the Jewish people and their journey in these years. But what's interesting to me, and I heard a commentary today saying this about Jerusalem, it's like, why would anybody be interested in Jerusalem? There's not even a river going through it. Like, there's no water there. And it's dry. And yet, there's something always been about Jerusalem. If you start with the Assyrians or Babylonians or Medes and Persians or Greeks or Romans, there's always been something about Jerusalem that the world has focused, sometimes fixated, on this place. It will be the place that Jesus will reign. But Isaiah's not finished. He says, this is a promise. This is one of the gifts that God's going to give you. You will be able to see him and listen to him and be with him in that sacred place. And then he goes on. And he says, on this earth, this earth will be changed. When he comes and he reigns, there will be a number of things. And in Isaiah 2, it says, the Lord will teach us his ways so that we may walk in his path. He will judge between the nations and settle disputes. He will teach and he will lead and he will reign over his people. So suddenly we will be living in a world not controlled by crooked politicians or manipulative financial groups or whatever else. We have a God who can see all things, know all things, and he will reign in justice and fairness. In fact, it will be so deep. It'll say this in Isaiah chapter 22 again. It says, and they will beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into the pruning hooks. Nations will not take up sword against nation, nor will they train for war anymore. If you know that phrase, you know that across the street from the United Nations, a wall was built with a staircase, and this verse was put upon it. Across from it is the United Nations, this group that's coming together to make sure we work with peace and unity and whatever throughout our world, and it's been a dismal failure. It's been politicking and playing and doing all kinds of things and setting agendas that are unholy, in fact. But God is saying, he's saying, I want you to understand this. There is going to come a time when Jesus, King Jesus, is reigning on his throne. They will look at their swords and they'll say, what's the use of that? Let's melt it down and let's use it for plows. And they will look together at each other and they'll see their spears and they say, well, we could use it and make them into fishing hooks or make them into swathing thing. I don't know. In fact, there isn't even plans of preparing for war. I don't know if you've noticed the mentality that's passed through our culture, but there's a mentality that how do you have peace in the world? Well, you have the biggest weapons. You have the greatest armies. And it's like, what? Yeah, well, if you have the biggest weapons and the greatest armies, no one's going to attack you and you'll have peace. That's the logic of our world. Jesus says, no, that's not the logic of our world. It's when you stop fighting, it's when you stop war. And he says, it will stop because I will be here. And so it'll be a land of peace and joy. In fact, it says there'll be no weeping. It's interesting, the parallels, because you'll see that in Isaiah, and then you'll see that again in Revelation. No weeping, no sorrow. Suddenly, it will be this beautiful, amazing place to live. King Jesus is in charge. We have a spiritual tenure that spreads throughout our whole world. Peace and love and relationships and community, all of those things happen. But Isaiah goes even deeper. He says there will be different kinds of prosperity that maybe you've not been used to. He first of all talks about it having a long life. And there's some strange verses. I don't know how Jim felt when he was reading strange verses, like a baby who dies at 100 years old will be still considered a baby. Or you know, people will live these long lives. And they'll be healthy, and there'll be no sickness and no sorrow, all of that kind of thing. There'll be these long lives. Now, that should twig you. As you hear that, it's like, what? Where did I hear that before in Scripture? I know if I go back to the very beginning of Genesis, they lived these amazing years, 800 years old, 950 years old. So not only do you as grow up and get married and have kids, but you have your see your kids' kids and kids' kids and kids' kids and kids, and it goes on. But you will enjoy an incredible family. Not going to be sickness, not going to be sorrow. You will enjoy the community of relationships in a rich, powerful way. And he says this. He says, and you'll have your own home. Now, in Canada, that's like, so? What's the big deal? A number of years ago, when I started in ministry here, I became kind of a chairman of a youth committee. And that basically, we oversaw all the youth work in our denomination from Manitoba to BC to the north. And we kind of worked it together, and I worked with some incredible youth workers. But I remember working with some friends in Vancouver. They are amazingly gifted musicians. They'd started basically a youth revival in Vancouver and were doing some great things. But as I talked to them, they talked to me about something I could not imagine. It was so expensive to live in Vancouver that they never planned to ever own their own home. They said, we couldn't even afford a down payment, and with our salaries, we couldn't even apply for a mortgage, and so we will always be renters. Now, I grew up in the prairies. It's like my goal is to own my own house. And it seems so strange. You guys are going to live that way all your life? Back in the time of Isaiah, you may have built your own house, but the promise that you could keep it was vague. You didn't know if a banker was going to come and you wouldn't pay your bills and he'd take it. You didn't know if an army was going to sweep through and destroy your city and burn it. You didn't know that the house that you own would always be your house. God says, in this kingdom, it'll be yours. It'll always be yours. For some of you, you've built your own house. Been a dream and a plan and a process, and you understand this value of saying, look at I built that. So incredible family and growth and long life and health, and you have your own land and your own home. The interesting thing is he also says, and your crops will just grow like crazy. Now there's all kinds of prophecies like this. There's that he will pour water into the desert and the deserts will bloom. And but he talks about how you, if you're a farmer, he says you'll go and you'll plant your crop and you'll let it grow, and even before you're ready to harvest, that soil will be ready to be planted again. So you'll take it off and plant the next day. And abundance. And but he also says these plants that you have, you not only see them in the moment, you'll see them over the journey. And he talks about vineyards, which is an interesting illustration. Because if you know anything about vineyards, you just don't plant a grapevine and have grapes the next year. You plant it, and you take it up the trestle, and you prune off the dead stuff and shape it, and then it grows and it grows, and between the time that you planted it and to the time that you enjoy the bounty of that fruit, the grapes, could be 12 years. And Isaiah is saying, this is what you need to know. You're not only going to watch your crops grow and harvest, you're going to watch your gardens and your trees and your plants mature and deepen and richen. You're going to be there. And so this whole theme is that you will prosper over years and years and years. But he's not finished yet. Because as he turns the picture, he starts talking, especially in chapter 2 and chapter 11, about some interesting pictures that kind of throw us actually a little bit. He's saying, first of all, the wolf will lay down with the lamb. Now, correction. If you've been brought up in a Christian church that says the lion will lay down with the lamb, it's not in the Bible. I don't know where it came from, but that's not the picture. The picture is a wolf, the natural enemy of a lamb, will lay down and they'll be safe together. So suddenly nature will be changing. He continues this picture. He's got a whole pile of these pictures explaining how this is changing and how the whole process of this changes. One of the things he says, a bear will eat with the cow. He'll talk about how the leopard will lay down with the goat, again another natural enemy. He talks about how children will be able to play with snakes. Now, this is where it's getting, it's like, really? He says, yeah, you'll have your own cobras and all of that stuff. And you know, your kids are in and they play too much Nintendo, so you send them out to play with their cobras. And then you'll look for your little one who's been crawling around on four legs for a while, and it's like, where is that guy? Where did he go? And then you'll see this pit full of snakes, and he'll be playing with them. Oh yeah, we'll come back and get him later. So there's a whole different shift will happen between nature. In fact, this is the one that's even weirder. He says, the lion will lay down and eat straw like an ox. Now, for some of you, you clued into what that just said. Because if you go back and understand the creation story, when Adam and Eve were in their garden, there's no animals killing animals for food. Excuse this word, they're all vegetarians. And something will have transformed so that they have moved back to that time and period. Don't miss what he's saying here. You think you have it nice now, but he has so much more. He has so much more. He's going to take you back to a time like Eden. Like Eden. Some of us think, boy, it would have been nice to see what that garden was like. You will. But even that, if you keep that picture in mind, he has an even deeper picture. For before he's finished, he says one other thing. He says, when you call, you will call, the Lord will answer, your cry for help, and he will say, here I am. As soon as he hears, he will answer you. Before you call, I will answer. While you are still speaking, I will hear. What's he talking about? He's talking about not only will you have prosperity in your world, not only will you have peace in your world, not only will you have God reigning in your world, you will have an intimate, personal, deep, rich walk with God himself. Do you remember Adam and Eve? Every night, the Lord would come and walk in the garden with them. They got to ask him any questions they wanted. Well, that's my interpretation anyway. They got to talk with him and be with him and know him. Isaiah is saying, I want you to hear something. Oh, Israel, you're going to be going through this incredibly difficult, hard, hard time. Some of you are going to say, where is God? And how come God is not answering? How come God is not fair? How come God is not just? Why isn't God not doing anything? How come he's all powerful and is silent? But you have to know that not only will he answer your prayer to bring you home, to reestablish your city, to do all of those things you ask for, he is going to give you so much more. He's going to return you to a place that's like Eden. It's interesting. One of the things that I've realized as I've been studying the book of Isaiah is as you look at the book of Isaiah, there's this fascinating parallel with the book of Revelation. As Isaiah is ending, he's wanting you and me to see this picture. That God loves you. And although you are going to go through these journeys and they're not always going to be nice and they're not always going to be easy and you're going to struggle and you're going to grumble and you're going to wrestle, there's going to be times that the Lord is going to say, I am with you and I will give you strength. There are times that he is going to take you out of those places and give you what you've asked for. But I want you to hear this today. He has so much more for you. The interesting part about all of these pictures that I've been sharing with you this morning is this isn't just for Israel. This is for you and me. We will visit the city of Jerusalem. We will hear Jesus preach and teach and instruct us so that we may know him. We will walk with him and live with him. We will enjoy the bounty of the incredible world. We will understand what it means to live in true peace and true joy and true abundance. We will understand what it means to have this incredible relationship with nature, both whether it's with our crops or with animals. We will understand the greatest of joys will be that we will know God and he will know us. And when we call, he will come and he will answer. Even before we ask. Isaiah wants to leave us with hope. Do you have that? Many of us go through these difficult times in our journey, in our life, and we start to ask what's going on or why. I've met with people who, over the periods of years that, who I'm just giving up on God. I don't care. He's not listening. He's not acting. He's not doing. And I'm thinking, boy, you have short-sighted. You don't see the big picture. Isaiah says, before we leave my book, I want you to see the big picture. I am a God who not only is present, not only provides, but I have much more for you. Would you pray with me? Heavenly Father, sometimes I listen to this and I think, well, Lord, salvation is enough. Heaven is enough. And it would be. But you are a loving, generous Father who has so much more to give us. And I would ask today that we would be a people who would live in that expectation. As things are dry or dusty or struggling or painful or lonely, may we remember that those are only temporary. That our God has our future. And with him, and because of him, it will be tremendous. I'd ask this in Jesus' name.